Chapter 27 Toward Thrax. Our path ran through the stricken forest for as long as the light lasted. A watch after dark, we reached the edge of a river, smaller and swifter than Guile, where by moonlight we could see broad cane fields on the farther side, waving in the night wind. Jolenta had been sobbing with weariness for some distance, and Dorcas and I agreed to halt. Since I would never have risked Terminus Est's honed blade on the heavy limbs of the forest trees, we would have had little firewood there. Such dead branches that we had come across had been soaked with moisture and were already spongy with decay. The riverbank provided an abundance of twisted weathered sticks, hard and light and dry. We had broken a good many and laid our fire before I remembered I no longer had my striker, having left it with the Autarch, who must also, I felt certain, have been the highly placed servant who had filled Dr. Talos's hands with Chrysos. Dorcas had flint, steel, and tinder among her scant baggage, however, and we were soon comforted by a roaring blaze. Jolenta was fearful of wild beasts, though I labored to explain to her how unlikely it was that the soldiers would permit anything dangerous to live in a forest that ran up to the gardens of the House Absolute. For her sake, we burned 3 thick brands at one end only, so that if need arose, we could snatch them from the fire and threaten the creatures she dreaded. No beasts came. Our fire drove off the mosquitoes, and we lay upon our backs and watched the sparks mount into the air. Far higher, the lights of flyers passed to and fro, filling the sky for a moment or two with a ghostly false dawn as the ministers and generals of the Autarch returned to the House Absolute or went forth to war. Dorcas and I speculated about what they might think when they looked down, for only an instant as they were whirled away, and saw our scarlet star, and we decided that they must wonder about us much as we wondered about them, pondering who we might be, and where we went, and why. Dorcas sang a song for me, a song about a girl who wanders through a grove in spring, lonely for her friends of the year before, the fallen leaves. Jolenta lay between our fire and the water, I suppose, because she felt safer there. Dorcas and I were on the opposite side of the fire, not only because we wanted to be out of her sight as nearly as possible, but because Dorcas, as she told me, disliked the sight and sound of the cold, dark stream slipping by. "Like a worm," she said. "A big ebony snake that is not hungry now, but knows where we are and will eat us by and by. Aren't you afraid of snakes, Severian?" Thecla had been. I felt the shade of her fear stir at the question and nodded. "I've heard that in the hot forests of the north, the Autarch of all serpents is Ouroboros, the brother of Abaya, and that hunters who discover his burrow believe they have found a tunnel under the sea, and descending it, enter his mouth, and all unknowing climb down his throat, so that they are dead, while they still believe themselves living. Though there are others who say that Ouroboros is only the great river there that flows to its own source, or the sea itself, that devours its own beginnings." Dorcas edged closer as she recounted all this, and I put my arm about her, knowing that she wanted me to make love to her, though we could not be sure Jolenta was asleep on the other side of the fire. Indeed, from time to time she stirred, seeming because of her full hips, narrow waist, and billowing hair to undulate like a serpent herself. Dorcas lifted her small, tragically clean face to mine, and I kissed her and felt her press herself to me, trembling with desire. "I am so cold," she whispered. She was naked, though I had not seen her undress. When I put my cloak about her, her skin felt flushed, as my own was, from the heat of the blaze. Her little hand slipped under my clothes, caressing me. "So good," she said. So smooth. And then, though we had coupled before, won't I be too small? Like a child. When I woke, the moon, it was almost beyond belief that it was the same moon that had guided me through the gardens of the House Absolute, had nearly been overtaken by the mounting horizon of the west. Its beryl in light streamed down the river, giving to every ripple the black shadow of a wave. I felt uneasy, without knowing why. Jolenta's fears of beasts no longer seemed so foolish as they had, and I got up and, after making certain she and Dorcas were unharmed, found more wood for our dying fire. I remembered the nodules, which Jonas had told me were often sent forth by night, and the thing in the antechamber. Nightbirds sailed overhead. Not only owls, such as we had in plenty nesting in the ruined towers of the citadel. Birds marked by their round heads and short, broad, silent wings, but birds of other kinds, with two forked and three forked tails, birds that stooped to skim the water and twittered as they flew. Occasionally, moths, vastly larger than any I had seen before, passed from tree to tree. Their figured wings were as long as a man's arms, and they spoke among themselves, as men do, but in voices almost too high for hearing. After I had stirred the fire, made sure of my sword and looked for a time on Dorcas's innocent face with its great tender eyelashes closed in sleep, I lay down again to watch the birds voyage among the constellations and enter that world of memory that, no matter how sweet or how bitter it may be, is never wholly closed to me. I sought to recall that celebration of Holy Catherine's Day that fell the year after I became captain of apprentices. But the preparations for the feast were hardly begun before other memories came crowding unbidden around it. In our kitchen, I lifted a cup of stolen wine to my lips and found it had become a breast running with warm milk. It was my mother's breast then, and I could hardly contain my elation, which might have wiped the memory away, at having reached back at last to her after so many fruitless attempts. My arms sought to clasp her, and I would, if only I could, have lifted my eyes to look into her face. My mother, certainly. For the children the torturers take know no breasts. The grayness at the edge of my field of vision, then, was the metal of her cell wall. Soon, she would be led away to scream in the apparatus, or gasp in Alowyn's necklace. I sought to hold her back, to mark the moment, so I might return to it when I chose. She faded, even as I tried to bind her to me, dissolving as mist does when the wind rises. I was a child again, a girl, Thecla. I stood in a magnificent chamber whose windows were mirrors, mirrors that at once illuminated and reflected. Around me were beautiful women twice my height or more, in various stages of undress. The air was thick with scent. I was searching for someone, but as I looked at the painted faces of the tall women, lovely and indeed perfect, I began to doubt if I should know her. Tears rolled down my cheeks. Three women ran to me, and I stared from one to another. As I did, their eyes narrowed to points of light, and a heart-shaped patch beside the lips of the nearest spread web-fingered wings. Severian. I sat up, uncertain of the point at which memory had become dream. This voice was sweet, yet very deep, and though I was conscious of having heard it before, I could not at once recall where. The moon was nearly behind the western horizon now, and our fire was dying a second death. Dorcas had thrown aside her ragged bedding, so that she slept with her sprite's body exposed to the night air. Seeing her thus, her pale skin rendered more pale still by the waning moonlight, save where the glow of the embers flushed it with red, I felt such desire as I had never known. Not when I had clasped Agia to me on the Adamnian steps. Not when I had first seen Jolenta on Dr. Talos' stage. Not even on the innumerable occasions when I had hastened to Thecla in her cell. Yet it was not Dorcas I desired. I had enjoyed her only a short time ago, and though I fully believed she loved me, I could not be certain she would have given herself so readily if she had not more than suspected I had entered Jolenta on the afternoon before the play, and if she had not believed Jolenta to be watching us across the fire. Nor did I desire Jolenta, who lay upon her side and snored. Instead, I wanted them both, and Thecla, and the nameless Meretrix who had feigned to be Thecla in the House Azure, and her friend who had taken the part of Thea, the woman I had seen on the stair in the House Absolute, and Agia, Valeria, Morwenna, and a thousand more. I recalled the witches, their madness and their wild dancing in the old court on nights of rain, the cool, virginal beauty of the red-robed Pelerines. Severian. It was no dream. Sleepy birds, perched on branches at the margin of the forest, had stirred at the sound. I drew Terminus Est and let her blade catch the cold dawn light, so that whoever had spoken should know me armed. All was quiet again, quieter now than it had ever been by night. I waited, turning my head slowly in my attempt to locate the one who had called my name, though I was conscious it would have been better if I could have appeared to know the correct direction already. Dorcas stirred and moaned, but neither she nor Jolenta woke. There was no other sound but the crackling of the fire, the dawn wind among the leaves, and the lapping water. "Where are you?" I whispered, but there was no reply. A fish jumped with a silver splash, and all was silent again. Severian. However deep it was, a woman's voice, throbbing with passion, moist with need. I remembered Agia, and did not sheathe my sword. The sand bar. Though I feared it was merely a trick to make me turn my back on the trees, I let my eyes search the river until I saw it, about 200 paces from our fire. Come to me. It was no trick, or at least not the trick I had at first feared. It was from downstream that the voice spoke. Come. Please. I cannot hear you where you stand. I said. I did not speak, but there was no reply. I waited, reluctant to leave Dorcas and Jolenta alone. Please. When the sun reaches this water, I must go. There may be no other chance. The little river was wider at the sandbar than below or above it, and I could walk upon the yellow sand itself, dry-shod, nearly to the center. To my left, the greenish water gradually narrowed and deepened. To my right lay a deep pool, perhaps 20 paces wide, from which water flowed swiftly yet smoothly. I stood on the sand with Terminus Est gripped in both hands, her square point buried between my feet. I'm here, I said. Where are you? Can you hear me now? As though the river itself were replying, three fish leaped at once, then leaped again, making a series of soft explosions on the surface. A moccasin, his brown back marked with linked rings of gold and black, glided up almost at my boot toes, turned as if to menace the jumping fish and hissed, then entered the ford on the upper side of the bar and swam away in long undulations. Through the body, he had been as thick as my forearm.
Do not fear. Look. See me. Know that I will not harm you.
Green though the water had been, it grew greener still. A thousand jade tentacles writhed there, never breaking the surface. As I watched, too fascinated to be afraid, a disk of white 3 paces across appeared among them, rising slowly toward the surface. It was not until it was within a few spans of the ripples that I understood what it was, and then only because it opened eyes. A face looked through the water at me. The face of a woman who might have dandled Baldanders like a toy. Her eyes were scarlet, and her mouth was bordered by full lips so darkly crimson I had not at first thought them lips at all. Behind them stood an army of pointed teeth. The green tendrils that framed her face were her floating hair.
I have come for you, Severian, she said.
No,
you are not dreaming.